Somebody was looking out for me. Thanks for putting a stand up here. Appreciate that. Can you grab that easel? I'm a poor artist, but I'm going to draw some stuff on it and hopefully explain some stuff to you and to us together this morning. We've been talking last week about Jesus' conversation in the Scripture, and the Bible's talk about rest for our souls. And we looked last week at a little bit of that and how vacation does not bring rest for our soul, but other things will. And I want to delve a little bit more deeply into this. Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew shares an important set of words with us that are both an invitation and a command. And we're going to start out with that in Matthew chapter 11, I believe, Linda. Jesus says to us this: "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." And then he says, "Take my yoke upon you." We're just going to stay on this one. Don't advance it yet. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Now I'm going to look at the first part of this, which is, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." This is from Jesus, a personal invitation. And it's an invitation to come to him personally and to be with him. And to understand that a little bit more clearly, I want you to reflect with me on our own human relationships. How many of you know someone that after you spend some time with them, they've just drained you? You feel like, oh, I just feel empty right now. I've spent emotional energy, I sense spiritual energy, it just drains me. Then there are other people that you spend time with, and they fill you, don't they? And this past week I went out to breakfast with a friend, and we ended up talking for 3 hours. We talked about guns and cars and mechanics. We talked about our kids. We talked about our family. And I looked down at the clock, and 3 hours had gone by. And my soul was more full than when I started. Have you had that experience too? Something powerful about that. Well, in a similar fashion, Jesus, in a very personal way, invites us to come to him and to be with him. Now, each year for the past, 6 or 7 years, we've sent a group of students off to Student Life for the Beach. And there's something very powerful that happens at Student Life for the Beach. Actually, three things. One of them is that the kids not only spend time with their friends, but have an opportunity, and most often do, open up in long conversations about what's happening inside of them, which is a powerful moment. At nighttime, we'll be sitting in the hallways up until very late, and the kids will be talking with us and sharing what's going on in their lives and their problems and their hurts, their joys. It's a very powerful thing. They'll share with their friends. They'll share in large group. They'll share just one-on-one. Very, very powerful thing. The second powerful thing that happens is teaching. There's some fantastic Bible teaching that happens that opens up a lot of that conversation and points us in that direction. But for me, the most powerful thing that happens, because I think it's a doorway to everything else, is those kids every evening have one solid hour of just worship. I'm not talking like going through a whole service here. One solid hour of just singing and worship. And at the end of that, there is a sense that God is in that place. And these kids and the adults that go end up, if they've never done this before, really worshiping God with all their heart. I mean, there are kids who are dancing. There are kids who normally around this place are pretty straight-laced. They have their hands in there. They're singing with all their might. They can't even sing and they're singing. And they are in the presence of God and worshiping. Now, I realize that some folks, and it doesn't matter what service they go to, this is true, some folks have trouble understanding praise music. I grew up on hymns. How many of you grew up on hymns? Right. So we're used to hymns. And hymns, you sing verses 1, 2, 3, and if it's there, 4, 5, 6, and 7, you're hoping it's not that long, but it could be. And you're done. But you sing praise music, And you can sing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And there's some folks who grew up singing hymns who don't understand. It's like singing verse 1 17 times. And you're like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Now, here's one of the reasons why you would do that. It's kind of like the man who, the day he married his wife, he told her that he loved her very deeply. And several years later, she came back and said, why don't you ever tell me that you loved me? And he said, here, honey, here's how I work. I told you I loved you. If that ever changes, I'll let you know. And what you and I need is to be told regularly that we're loved. That's what we need. In many ways, worship, regardless of whether it's a hymn or a praise song, and it really doesn't matter, is a conversation with God in which we share with God that we love God. It's a very personal thing. For me, when I sing What a Friend I Have in Jesus, I like to close. You'll oftentimes see me up here singing the last hymn with my eyes closed, because I oftentimes like to picture Jesus right in front of me saying to him the words that I'm singing. Because when I sing What a Friend I Have in Jesus, what I want to do is say to him, what a friend I have in you. And that moment of worship opens the doorway to a different kind of place in his presence. They have this newfangled device out now. You may have seen it before, in which you can plug this thing into the wall, and it's like a strip, a bar that's, I don't know how long, it's about this long. And you can actually sit your phone or anything else that you want to charge on top of it. You don't plug it in or anything. You sit it on top of it, and it charges just while it sits on top of it. Have you seen this? It's really cool. You can lay out all your devices on top of this bar. And just by being near to it, it will charge the device. And that's exactly what happens when we come into God's presence. As we come close to Him, His Spirit brings His power and His presence and His rest to our souls. And that's the power of worship. So when Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Here's what He's saying. When there are nights when you can't sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning, why do you stare at the stupid infomercials on TV going click, 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 click? Because sometimes there's a reason why you're up at night. Because you can't sleep. And it's not just because you can't sleep. It's because something's happening inside of you. So instead of taking that to God, who can do something about it, we stare at some stupid piece of exercise equipment that we're never going to buy. And we just walk, and we do it until we're so tired that we eventually fall asleep. Now when we wake up, has that dealt with the stuff inside of us? No. We've just exhausted our body to the point that we made it fall asleep. Jesus is offering us something different. Come to me. Come to me. Have the conversation with me. Come to me, all you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Why? Because Jesus can actually bring rest to your soul. That's why. It's such a powerful invitation, and we fail to take him up on it so often. Then he comes to the second part, and this is a command. The first was an invitation, the second is a command. This is what he says, take. You know what it means to take, right? It means you have to do something about it. I want to make that very clear. This is a command that you have to do something about. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you will find, what is it? Rest for your souls. Now here's the thing. I don't know how many of you know this, but I have tremendous artistic skills, so you're about to be wowed. This, when it talks about yoke, it's not an egg yolk. That's a yoke. I know it looks like a bad pair of glasses, but it's a yoke. It's a double yoke. And you put an animal's neck through here. How about that? I know. This will be sold after the service for missions money. Now here's the thing about a yoke. A yoke is designed so that you can pull something. You would attach something off the back of a yoke and you would have a cart or a plow or something like that. A yoke is designed so that you can do work. And Jesus says, take my yoke upon you. And the reason why I'm saying that is because you already have a yoke on you. And he's saying, take off the one you have and take on mine. Now, a good yoke is made to fit each specific animal. Because each animal is different. They have a different height, they have a different weight, they have a different size neck. And a good yoke doesn't hurt the animal. It fits them perfectly. And in this context, Jesus is speaking to a people who had a yoke on them from the Pharisees. And here's what he was saying. Jesus, in the Old Testament, told people that they were to stop working. Here it is in Exodus chapter 20. You've seen this before, but I'm going to read it to you. In Exodus chapter 20, it says, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord, your God. On it you shall not do any work. Stop working. Neither you nor your son nor your daughter nor your manservant nor your maidservant nor your animals nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made holy. Let me ask you a question. Why did God rest on the seventh day? What? Please, no, he was not tired. Now, why did God rest on the seventh day? To set an example for us. And here's how we know that. When has God rested since then? Let me ask you, what day did God take off this past week? When did he say, today I'm not taking your calls, your prayers, or your problems? Thursday's my day off. So if you've got a problem on Thursday, you're on your own. Don't go to the hospital. Don't have any issues. Because Thursday's my Sabbath. Is that what God does? No. He took one day off. And why did he take it off? To show us that we needed to take it off. That's why, because God doesn't take every Sunday off. It's not like Sunday's a holy day, we go to church, that should get you covered, don't worry about anything else, I'm out of the office, please call on Monday. And so, he did this to show us. And so here's what happened. The Pharisees said, well, if the command is to stop working for one day, we got to figure out what that means. When do we start the process to stop working? And when can we start working again? And what does it mean to work? And how do we work and not work? And how do we eat? And how? So they created some 600 laws around the Sabbath to figure out how to stop working. And by the time the people had read all 600 laws, they were tired. And they tried to keep all 600 laws so that they could stop working. And they put more work into trying to stop working than they did in working. And Jesus looked at this and he said, you have put a heavy yoke on these people that I did not give them. Because God gave a single command and the Pharisees gave 600. And so Jesus said, take off that yoke. Now we put yokes on ourselves sometimes. One of the reasons why God told us to stop working is because you and I are beings who naturally worship. We don't have to be taught how to worship fame, do we? We automatically do it. We don't have to be taught how to worship money, do we? We automatically do it. Worship is intrinsic to our being because we were created to worship, but we were created to worship whom? Good. God, yes. We are created to worship God, not all the other stuff we worship. And so, We were told to stop working one day a week because if we don't, we will end up becoming workaholics. We will end up becoming the person who chases the almighty dollar. We will end up becoming the people who are all about our own agenda. And he tells us not just to stop working, but to stop working and do what? Worship. That's what he tells us to do. Why does he tell us to do this? Because God's sitting around tapping his toe, waiting to hear good things from us? I can't wait for you to adore me today. No. Because we as human beings need to connect to the God of life. We need him. And so he reminds us, stop working and worship. But do you know what we do? We say, I know better. I can go 7 days without ceasing, without worshiping. I can do it. And so we decide to put our own yoke on. And then when we've done dragging that beast around for a while, we realize that we're tired. Not just physically or emotionally, but spiritually, in our soul, we are tired. So then God comes to us and he says in Ephesians chapter 4, would you put this up for me? I love this. This challenges me a lot. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. How many of you ever gone to bed angry? Come on. I'll call you to the altar if you don't raise your hands. I'm going to make you. Come on now. Now, how many of you all went to bed angry and slept well? It doesn't very often happen, does it? If you go to bed really angry, what do? There you go. You stew, you toss and turn, you roll around because there's no peace in your soul. So God says to you, you have two choices. You can either keep your yoke on, which is this. I'm angry and I kind of like it. I have a little bit of joy in my anger because it's fun to be a little bit angry. So I'm going to hold on to that baby, even if it keeps me up tonight. Or you can do the hard work of working through your anger. How many of you know that that's sometimes hard work to let go of your anger? That's the yoke that Jesus is offering. But on the other side of that yoke, when you work through your anger, is what? It's peace. It's restoration. It's wholeness. So Paul says to the church in Ephesus, be careful with anger. Why? Because it's caustic. Anger is caustic. Anger will erode things. It will eat at stuff. True? As a matter of fact, as a corollary, he says, don't let the sun go down when you're angry, and be careful how long you hold on to it, because you can give the devil a foothold. In other words, it can eat a little place into your soul that's big enough for the devil to stick his foot and keep it there. And the devil will encourage you. You just keep holding on. He'll pick at that. He'll give you reasons to be angry. You deserve to be angry. And you let the devil get a foothold, and he will move your anger toward bitterness. And how heavy a weight to drag behind you is bitterness. And so, you either have the yoke that you want to hold on to, which is anger, or the yoke that Jesus offers you, which is being willing to work through your anger, to let go, and to let God work through this, and do it by the end of the day. Now, I'm not making this stuff up. Am I not reading right from the Bible? This is work, but the work on the other side affects your soul. Both do. One leads you to restoration and the other doesn't. Here's another one, Matthew chapter 6, verse 15. This is a hard one. And I picked this one because he says it so plainly. Stop the unforgiveness. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive you your sins. That makes you sit up a little straighter in a pew, doesn't it? Here's what I know. If I were to ask you about painful moments in your life, I'll bet that you could scroll to the past and you could probably find some situations that are still fresh with pain. And that's a sign to me that we have not worked all the way through forgiveness when the pain is still so fresh and the event happened so long ago. And the forgiveness may not even be for somebody else. It may be for God who let it happen. But unforgiveness does not lead to peace or rest in our souls. And I don't know how we hope to get rest in our souls when we're willing to carry around a yoke that's dragging unforgiveness behind us. And it's so serious that Jesus says, I want to get your attention. If you're unwilling to let go what someone else has done against you, then I'm not willing to let go what you have done. Because I want you to see the power that unforgiveness has over you in your life. I want you to understand it. How many of you would agree that forgiveness is a huge amount of work? It's huge. Forgiveness is a lot of work. And it's not like when we were 7 and we made our kids say they were sorry and then they said they were sorry and their friend said, okay, I forgive you. It's not like that, is it? But unforgiveness will deeply affect your soul. Deeply. It will also deeply affect your relationship with God. Deeply. Jesus says, take my yoke upon you. It is still work. A yoke is for work. But, he says, I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find, what does he say? After you take your yoke upon me, you will find rest for your souls. Here's the last one. And there are a whole lot more that I could put up here, but I just know that we all deal with these. Stop greed. You and I constantly battle with greed. Constantly. And here's why. And the reason why I put this up here is it gets to the heart of the issues that we're really dealing with. And for many of these things, the reason why we haven't dealt with them yet is because they're power issues. They're issues of power. And greed is ultimately an issue of power. Because if I have money, I have some control. And when I don't have money, I have less control. And that's an issue in our lives. We want to be able to control our safety. We want to be able to control what we can and can't do. And most of all, we want to be able to control our comfort. Because one of the biggest things that our heart yearns to go after, if it's not worshiping God, is comfort. How many of you know that money will buy you all kinds of comfort in this world? If you own a cat, you don't have to feed your cat anymore. You can now get a cat feeder that's got a 50-gallon drum on it. You dump 17 bags of food in it, and it will automatically feed your cat every day. And then you don't have to change a litter box, because now they got a litter box that's got a rake that will automatically drag the stuff right out of the litter box. And you can leave for 20 years, and your cat will just survive just fine in your house without you. That is the heart of comfort. And it can be purchased right now if you just have enough money. Why own a pet in the first place? But we have these things because comfort is so important to us, and money in so many ways can buy us comfort. And that's why we want money for us. Because I can buy myself security. I can buy myself peace. I can buy myself comfort, and all that buys into me, 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 which is greed. All of it. It leads us to that. And so, Jesus, in speaking to the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, is talking to them about a situation in life. And here's what he's saying to them. The Pharisees understood the principle of tithing. Tithing means to give 10% of what you own. And here's what he said. What sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites? For you are careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens. So here's what they did. This is the time of year when we harvest from our gardens. Whenever they harvested tomatoes, one out of every 10 tomatoes went to God. Now I'm happy to give God every zucchini. He can have them all. But they would take even their herb gardens and every 10th oregano, they would clip it and give it to God, as if to say, I'm going to obey this to the very nth degree. And here's what they were missing. What they were missing was that God was trying to teach them to be generous people with generous hearts. And when someone came along with a need, here's what they would say. I gave at the office. I already gave my 10%. I did what I was supposed to do. And so looking at that, Jesus said to them, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You should tithe. Yes, you should give your 10%. He said, yes, do that. The discipline of giving leads you to be a generous person. But do not do it to the neglect of the more important things. Giving affects us. Isn't it interesting? Think about this exercise. When you give on Christmas morning, does it affect you? Yes, it does. But think about this. Does it affect you at all when you put a check in the offering plate? Isn't that weird? We can give a gift to somebody else and it affects us. You can buy flowers and bring them home and give them to someone and you can feel something. But very often, we haven't made that connection to giving to God. We give a lot of times the way we say the Our Father. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, the kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Tell me when this prayer is done and then I'll say amen. No. Giving was meant to be an action of the heart and the soul. For God so loved the world that he gave. Yes. See, giving is meant to be an antidote to greed because it says, this is not all about me, and I will find space in my life for God and what God wants to do and for something beyond me. And I will take off the yoke of worrying about my own security and the almighty dollar. And Jesus said, that will bring peace to your soul. It will. Now, ultimately, the reason why we struggle with this is not just because it's hard. It's because when we take on Jesus' yoke, we are saying, you are in control and I am not. And for a human being, that is one of the hardest things for us to do, is to decide that Jesus is in control. But let me tell you something. The very act of surrender to Jesus is the very act that leads to the thing that we want, which is peace in our souls. And that's in part because Jesus knows us so much better than we do. That's why his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Does that mean that there isn't work or that it's not easy to do? No. We have all of that. But the choice that you make is not doing no work at all, because you're going to drag this stuff around with you unless you surrender it to God. And so if you and I really want rest and peace in our souls, if we really want to be able to sing, it is well with my soul. Think about that song. That song was an act of surrender by a man who lost so much. And yet he said, I look at all this and I'm willing to surrender to God and say, it is well, it is well, it is well with my soul. So we're going to close the service a little bit differently than what we usually do. We're going to spend some time in prayer and ask God to be with us. And Rich is going to play for us a song that we're going to listen to together. And I'm going to invite you during this time, as he's singing, I'm going to invite you to come before God. And I'm going to invite you to share with him where you need to let go. What is it that you need to surrender? What is it that is holding you back? And Jesus is inviting you into his presence in this moment. Be close to him and be willing to surrender to his Spirit.